This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a very special Memorial Day as we honor the fallen. I hope you are having a wonderful day. I hope you have taken a moment to honor the fallen. You don't have to sit around crying all day, or if you feel like it, you are welcome to sit around crying all day. Prayers for the families who are hurting, uniquely hurting today. Prayers from us to you here on the Jesse Kelly Show. Now, we're going to finish up with Korea here in a few, and then we're going to move on, start talking some Vietnam. I'm going to do some more names because there are so many. In fact, I'll get to some names here in a few. Let's do another Distinguished Service Cross citation and finish up Korea before I get to that, because I know we're going to do some Vietnam. We're going to do some global war on terror stuff. I want to caution you against something. It can be tempting, whether you fought in one of these or lost someone in one of these, or maybe you're just an observer of some kind, it can be really, really tempting to say things or think things like, what was it all for? What did he die for? Was it worth it? Was it even worth it? Whether it's Korea or whether it's Vietnam or global war on terror, it's very, very, very common. Very common. And there's nothing wrong with questioning that stuff. But I'm here to tell you, that's not what this day is for me, for one, and for two. It could be the most unworthy cause in the world. That doesn't at all change the sacrifice. That doesn't at all change the bravery. We are here honoring the sacrifice and the courage and what these men gave up. Today, I don't sit around, because I'm not doing that to myself. I don't sit around and beat my head against the wall and say it was for nothing. That's garbage. Don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to yourself, all right? Another one from the Korean War, Thomas J. Barnes from Gasconade, Missouri. I hope I'm saying that right. The President of the United States takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to Thomas J. Barnes, 1st Lieutenant Infantry, U.S. Army, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations against an armed enemy of the United Nations while serving as Executive Officer of Company K, 3rd Battalion, 17th Infantry Regiment, 7th Infantry Division. First Lieutenant Barnes distinguished himself by extraordinary heroism in action against enemy aggressor forces at Sokoge, Korea, on the 9th of July, 1953. On that date, Lieutenant Barnes participated in a counterattack to secure a heavily fortified hill where the company was suddenly halted and pinned down by intense artillery, mortar, and small arms fire, which seriously hampered further progress and forced the men to seek cover. Pause for a moment. Sorry, no disrespect to him. I just want to again explain. When you're fighting in this environment, it's about taking hilltops from the enemy and then holding hilltops once you take them so he can't take them from you. In this environment, remember that big special we did on World War I in the Alps? In mountainous environments, really all environments, but in these mountain environments, you want the high ground because then you look down and you can observe everything the enemy's doing. You can set up your artillery pieces, your mortar pieces up there and fire down on him. All the advantages for the guy who has the hill. So if you don't have the hill and he has the hill, you have to go take the hill. And then once you get the hill, you have to dig in because he's coming back to take the hill back from you. That's Korea. Obviously, there are other parts of it, but that is so much of Korea. All right, back to this thing here. On that date, Lieutenant Barnes participated in a counterattack to secure a heavily fortified hill position when the company was suddenly halted and pinned down by intense enemy artillery, mortar, and small arms fire, which seriously hampered further progress and forced the men to seek cover. Realizing the vulnerability of their position and refusing to take cover, he unhesitatingly left his position with utter disregard for his safety, moved to a position approximately 50 yards from an enemy bunker. From this exposed position, he daringly fired several rounds into the enemy bunker, destroying it completely and killing all the occupants. The friendly assault forces were thus inspired and encouraged by Lieutenant Barnes, who, despite enemy fire, moved fearlessly among the men, urging them to rout the enemy. Finding the company commander a casualty during the ensuing battle and other members of the company scattered, he assumed command, quickly reorganized the men, and resumed the attack. Dominating the critical situation through sheer force of heroic example, he led the daring assault up the hill where they were again met with enemy mortar, grenade, and small arms fire, making further advance impossible. Concerned for the lives of his men, he calmly ordered them to withdraw to a trench below the crest of the objective, but he remained exposed on high ground until all had gained cover. Then descending and hastily jumping into the trench below, he was hit by an enemy mortar burst that critically wounded him and killed several others. Although partially blinded and seriously wounded in the left leg, he attempted to rise to assist his injured comrades, but collapsed. He refused medical aid and evacuation until all others were treated, and he later succumbed to his wounds. That's awesome, man. That's the kind of man you follow into the mouth of hell right there. And how many of these names? I mean, how many people ever heard of Thomas J. Barnes? You just don't think about the names. You don't think about the deeds. And the men who fought, we're going to move on from Korea. Actually, we're going to go to Vietnam next, which would be long and heavy. But they call Korea the Forgotten War because it is largely forgotten. Sandwiched between World War II, which is famous, and Vietnam, which is infamous, I suppose. But the Korean War had some of the nastiest fighting out there. And you know what's so sad? I mean, in a way, admirable and awesome, but so incredibly sad to me is how many of our guys in Korea died who had survived World War II. There were a lot of World War II veterans. They really made up the backbone of the military in Korea because we had kicked everyone else out. We had, like I said, we were drawing down the military, everybody leave, everyone out, we don't want to pay for it. But these World War II veterans, you know, you want to hang on to these guys with all kinds of combat experience. So we hung on to so many of these guys, and they brought that combat experience with them to World War II, and they were lions out there in World War II, organizing our men, getting our men ready, and in large part, they're a big reason why the guys who lived. Let's do some more names. These are World War II names. Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Shea, Corporal Bernice Bond, Private First Class Boyd Kimry, Private Neil Jones, Private Edward Grexek, Private Leo Crambier, Private Charles Call, First Lieutenant Baker Tilau, Lieutenant Joseph Cardarelli, Fire Controlman 2, Julian Rudek, Private First Class David Scannell, Private First Class James Len, Private First Class John Corrado, Second Lieutenant Harold Kuhn, Staff Sergeant Ernest Esham, Private First Class John Prizwara, Sergeant Frank Cerrone, Staff Sergeant Jerome Samberg, Second Lieutenant John Eberhardt, Second Lieutenant Niall Sherwood, Chief Water Tender Peter Tomich, Fireman First Class Lester Mayfield, Private Charles Campbell, Sergeant Albert Kinzer, Private Varden Williams, Private First Class Melvin Wyndham, Private First Class Roy Goodpaster Jr. There are a lot more I'm going to get to. First, we are going to switch up gears here, and we're going to talk about another war that could be hard to talk about. I know we have so many Vietnam veterans who listen to this show, and that's something we take a lot of pride in. So we're going to talk some Vietnam in just a moment. Before we do that, I want to play a couple more words from Trump today. I really thought he did wonderful.
In every generation since, at Trenton and Yorktown, at Vicksburg and Shiloh, and in faraway places with names like Chateau, Terreri, Anzio, Iwo Jima, Quezon, Kandahar, really just a few chosen names, and these are names that have become so important on the altar of freedom. They plunged into the crucible of battle, stormed into the fires of hell, charged into the valley of death, and rose into the arms of angels.
Amen. We are going to, well, I have a long one I'm going to read. Mac V. Sog. Next.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day, honoring as many of the fallen as we can get to in ways that always seem completely insufficient, but we're doing the best we can to honor them and the families they left behind. Now, before I get to this reading, and I'm about to read something, it's not even a citation, but it's like 4 pages long. So it's going to take me a few minutes to read it. I'm actually stealing it, as a matter of fact, from the Special Operations Memorial Foundation. I want to make sure they get credit for this. Before I read the writing of this Vietnam veteran, and I'm going to read a couple other Vietnam Distinguished Service Cross citations, I want to remind you about the specific part of Vietnam that had a higher percentage of casualties than any other. And that would be Mac V. Sog. You have heard of Delta Force, right? Yeah. These guys were the OGs of that. The guys who actually lived through Vietnam were the ones who really guided and created so much of that. Mac V. Sog, Military Assistance Command, Vietnam. And then the Sog portion says Studies and Observation Group. Sounds like a bunch of nerds taking pictures, right? Except they were all killers. The bravest. So they did the most ridiculously brave things. I will tell you, every time I read about a SOG mission, I'm shocked it was allowed for them to do this. And I'm not shocked that so many died. Way more than half. I mean, you died. If you went into SOG and stayed there for long enough, you were going to die. Here's what it was. You know Vietnam. It doesn't matter whether or not you know Vietnam. You know Vietnam is divided at this point in time into North and South Vietnam. Okay? Right? Well, on the western side of Vietnam, it always helps if you look at a map, like we always say, look at a map. On the western side of Vietnam, what do you see if you're looking at a map? Laos, Cambodia, or at least that's what you would have seen back then. Laos and Cambodia. We were not at war with Laos or Cambodia back then. Frankly, the Vietnam War wasn't technically a war. But either way, Laos didn't want American troops in Laos. Cambodia didn't want American troops in Cambodia. The Vietnamese knew this. And remember, all their supplies, all their men, they're all in North Vietnam, but they're trying to defeat South Vietnam. So what the North Vietnamese did is they moved their men, their trucks, their equipment. We're talking food, bombs, bullets, everything. They moved those things in Laos or Cambodia. They went west outside of Vietnam. And that you've of course, heard of the Ho Chi Minh Trail. It was not one trail. That's ridiculous. Don't ever think of it that way. It was a gigantic essentially highway and trail system that was always being rebuilt and carved up that went through Laos and Cambodia so they could move everything down south, and they thought we couldn't touch them. It didn't take us long to figure out. It didn't take us long to figure out what exactly we were dealing with here. We were dealing with something that had to be dealt with. I know that's a terrible way to put it. That's a terrible, terrible way to put it. But we had to do something about all the men and equipment moving south. The military came up with an idea. Let's take some Green Berets. There were SEALs involved too as well. We want to make sure they obviously get credit. And we have to make it all volunteer because it'll be so dangerous and so many will die. But we will send smaller teams into these areas to observe where the trucks are, where are the highway, where are the men bedding down, where are they eating? Because they would start bases, right? There were base camps along the way. And then, because we can't send in a large group of ground troops, but what we can do is fly some planes in there and bomb it to smithereens. Go observe. And they did so much more, but they were always, in every sense of the word, behind enemy lines and deep in enemy territory. And they had, look, there wasn't much that could help them. They had air that would fly above them, usually in like a Piper Cub, like a small plane. And they would talk to him, and he would try to call in airstrikes when they needed them, and they always needed them. They would try to call in attack helicopters, Cobras, gunships when they needed them, and they always needed them because they were always being hunted. It didn't take the North Vietnamese, this is a very capable army as well, that didn't take the North Vietnamese long to figure out, we have a small group of specialists who keep landing here and they're blowing things up and they're causing trouble for us. They're kidnapping people. We were doing prisoner snatches, assassinating people. We have to get them. And so the North Vietnamese trained some hunter-killer counter-recon groups who would watch these guys land. They would monitor where our guys were going to land, and then they would send out these hunter-killer teams to go hunt down our guys. And our guys, and I'm explaining this because I'm about to read it. It gets laid out for you in this writing. Our guys would sometimes land, and they'd be on the run almost immediately calling, we need to get out of here now. And they're calling in airstrikes, and everything's raining down around them, and everybody's dying all around them all the time. Insane levels of bravery. Insane. It's so dangerous. I can't believe they allowed people to do it. But this went on for years, the secret war in Vietnam. And I'm about to read you the story of a lion next.
The Jesse Kelly Show. On air and online at jessekellyshow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, a Memorial Day, and I can't tell you to email me the names still, even though we're live here. There are just so many to get to, and I'm not going to be able to get to any more than we currently have, but if you want to email the show, you are welcome to. Maybe we'll save them for next year, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Now, I just gave you just a brief recap of what MACV SOG did in Vietnam. This is something I'm about to read to you. These are not my words. I don't want to take credit for them. This is from the Special Operations Memorial Foundation. Do you want to hear what the SOG guys did and why so many died? It's like four pages. So you're going to have to stay with me. But listen to this. His name is John J. Kedenberg. Specialist 5 Kedenberg distinguished himself on the 13th of June 1968 while serving with Command and Control North Forward Operating Base 2 as an advisor to a long-range reconnaissance patrol of South Vietnamese irregular troops. Pause on this. Sorry. The MACV SAW guys would generally go out, and there would be only two or three Americans in the group. Those would be the stud Green Beret types. And then we brought out indigenous troops, either Chinese mountain tribes or Vietnamese mountain tribes that we trained and we brought indigenous troops with us. You're going to hear that referred to in this story. The team's mission was to conduct counter-guerrilla operations deep within enemy-held territory. Prior to reaching the day's objective, the team was attacked and encircled by a battalion-sized North Vietnamese Army force. Specialist 5 Kedenberg assumed immediate command of the team, which succeeded after a fierce fight in breaking out of the encirclement. As the team moved through the thick jungle to a position from which it could be extracted by helicopter, Specialist 5 Kedenberg conducted a gallant rear guard fight against the pursuing enemy and called for tactical air support and rescue helicopters. His withering fire against the enemy permitted the team to reach a pre-selected landing zone with the loss of only one man who was unaccounted for. Once in the landing zone, Specialist 5 Kedenberg deployed the team into a perimeter defense against the numerically superior enemy force. Just a heads up, he's probably facing 1,000 men. Okay. So when tactical air support arrived, he skillfully directed airstrikes against the enemy, suppressing their fire so that helicopters could hover over the area and drop slings to be used in the extraction team. About half the team, they would drop slings and you would clip onto it and then the helo would lift you out. They would drop slings or ladders if the helo couldn't get all the way down. Anyway. After half the team was extracted by helicopter, Specialist 5 Kedenberg and the remaining three members of the team harnessed themselves to a sling on a second hovering helicopter. Just as the helicopter was about to lift them out of the area, the South Vietnamese team member who had been unaccounted for after the initial encounter with the enemy appeared at the landing zone. Specialist 5 Kedenberg unhesitatingly gave up his place in the sling to the man and directed the helicopter pilot to leave the area. He then continued to engage the enemy, who were swarming into the landing zone, killing six enemy soldiers before he was overpowered. Specialist 5 Kedenberg's inspiring leadership, consummate courage, and willing self-sacrifice permitted his small team to inflict heavy casualties on the enemy and escape almost certain annihilation. His actions reflect great credit upon himself in the U.S. Army. Shall I keep going? You know what? No, we'll stop on that one for now because there are other ones I want to get to. You were dropped. This happened a lot. One story I read, you see, there were recon teams and then there were hatchet force teams. There were different kinds of teams, but the recon teams were, in general, reconnaissance. Hatchet force teams were more search and destroy stuff, but we'll focus on the recon teams. The recon teams oftentimes had the name of U.S. states. They would be recon, you know, RT Rhode Island, RT Illinois, something like that. I believe it was RT New Mexico. A guy was talking about how he had just got to Vietnam, he just got into SOG, and he was attached to RT New Mexico. And he had trained with RT New Mexico, and he was about to go on his first mission with RT New Mexico. And right as he's about to get on the helicopter, somebody who'd been previously injured showed up and said, "Hey, new guy, you're sitting this one out. I'm on the team." New guy sits it out. He's all bummed. RT New Mexico took off in their helos. All dead that night. All dead that night. Happened all the time. You land behind enemy lines. I don't care how tough you are. It's 10 men. You've got 10 men, maybe. They've got 1,000. They're swarming you. You're dead. All the time. And think about the bravery it takes to give up your spot on the helicopter. There's not another one. You are giving up your life right then and there. When they are swarming your position and there's one spot left on the helo, and you get out and grab your buddy and you say, "You take my spot. You live. I will die." These are the kind of people we honor today. That's incredible. Let's do some more names. These are Vietnam names, all of them. Private First Class Douglas Winchell Jr., Major Robert Forche, Hospital Corpsman 3 Winston Parker, First Lieutenant Lance Workman, Captain Fred Jackson, Lance Corporal Wendell Wheat, Sergeant Orville Fritz, Private First Class Philip Michael Callan, Captain Donald Kilpatrick, Specialist Thomas Fitzpatrick, Lieutenant Colonel Randolph Perry, First Lieutenant Charles Wyatt, Chief Warrant Officer 2 Kenneth Messenger, Specialist 4 Robert Lee, Specialist 4 David Nelson, Captain Wilburn Gideon, Corporal Dale Gunnell, Corporal Walter Wickett, Sergeant Chris Peebler, Captain Peter Clearly, Lance Corporal Robert McCluskey, Specialist 4 Charles McConnell, First Lieutenant Charles Wyatt, Corporal Wetzel Ramsey, Sergeant Hugh Sexton, Sergeant Tony England, First Sergeant Luis Pelizzari, Airman First Class David Birch, Private First Class Robert Araujo, First Lieutenant Charles Wyatt, Staff Sergeant Charles Knapp, Private First Class Dan Bullock, Specialist 4 Robert Boycourt, Corporal Charles McMahon, Lance Corporal Darwin Judge, Sergeant Kent Longmire, Sergeant Michael Mean, Corporal Terry Kawamura, Corporal Edward Cox, Private Steve Runyon, Private First Class Robert Cook, First Lieutenant John Schaefer, Second Lieutenant Ralph Avery, Major Francis Fenelay, Lieutenant Steve Olson, Lance Corporal David Cutshaw, First Lieutenant Daniel Kirschgeisler, Sergeant Claude Gibbons, Master Sergeant Errol Bachman, Specialist 4 Kenneth Kreutz, Chief Warrant Officer Michael Lukow, Corporal James Kane, Corporal Eric Johnson, Major John Oldman, Private First Class Ronald Williams, Lance Corporal Jerry Phillips. We'll do a couple more Vietnam things, and then we'll move on, maybe do some global war on terror things, read some more names as we chop away at things here. I probably want to play what Pete Hegseth had to say about the story of the unknown, the tomb of the unknown soldier. It's not, well, whatever. I want you to hear it from Pete Hegseth's mouth, and then we'll get back to some more Vietnam stuff. Next.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, a Memorial Day, more importantly, and we are doing the best we can to honor the fallen in a very small way on the show today, trying to tell their stories and the conflicts and what they went through. Now, this is long, and I am not going to interrupt it. It's way longer than anything I normally play uninterrupted, but Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth told a tale. Listen to it.
We gather here to honor our very best, gone in their youth. To properly do so, we understand who they are and what they fought for. It is our simple duty to them. In America, with our great experiment in self-government, it is fitting that the most honored and closely guarded tomb in the land is that of an anonymous soldier of an unknown rank. When the tomb was dedicated on November 11th, Veterans Day, the unknown received the Medal of Honor. It's a uniquely American tradition that we honor anonymous sacrifice above worldly greatness. While we don't know the unknown's identity, race, or creed, we know his story. It's the story of every soldier, every warrior. It's a simple story, as old as war. A young man with hopes and dreams and loves who's called by his country leaves behind his hometown, his parents, his siblings, his sweetheart, all that he knows to go fight a war that he may or may not understand. He's called to go through hell and back, to sleep in a trench, to eat out of a tin cup or on the hood of a Humvee, to pray as bullets and bombs thunder around him, to fear for the bullet or the mortar or the IED or the RPG with his name on it. He does it willingly and stoically, because he loves his country, his brothers in arms, and his family. This is the story of the unknown, the story of the fallen soldier who we have gathered today to honor. It is the story of the American warrior. He answered the call, fought, and died for this republic, the ultimate sacrifice of a free people.
I wanted to play that because I wanted to talk to you really quickly before I do a couple more Vietnam things, specifically about the MIA, the missing in action portion of this. This is very, very hard. It's hard enough for families, but this portion of it is brutally hard. Sometimes the bodies don't come back. Things happen in war. Bodies get blown to bits, captured, taken, lost. And even though oftentimes, for instance, Vietnam, if someone went missing in action, Vietnam, still classified as missing in action, Vietnam, obviously that person is very likely not still with us today. That person probably died that day in the jungle somewhere, died, gone, who knows. But the family that's already suffering doesn't even get the closure of knowing. Don't even get the closure of knowing. You don't know. And I just wanted to say a special prayer for those people. Keep them in your prayers. There are people out there right now listening to the sound of my voice that are going through this, have gone through this unknown. How hard is that? Unknown. They didn't even know who it was. Sometimes you can't identify that. That's how it goes. It's not a clean or wonderful thing at all. Let's do another Distinguished Service Cross, Vietnam, for Eugene J. Connor, Cumberland, Iowa. The President of the United States takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to Eugene Joseph Connor, Major, Artillery, U.S. Army, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations involving conflict with an armed hostile force in the Republic of Vietnam while serving with Advisory Team 100, Capital Military District Advisory Detachment, United States Army Advisory Group, United States Military Assistance Command, Vietnam. Major Connor distinguished himself by exceptionally valorous actions on the 31st of January, 1968, while serving as a member of an advisory team during enemy attacks on Saigon. When he was informed that a truck carrying 20 military policemen had been savagely ambushed in an alley in Gia Dinh, and all the soldiers had been killed or wounded, Major Connor immediately moved to the battle site and volunteered to assist in rescuing the trapped victims. The Viet Cong were firmly entrenched in buildings along the alley and had set up a fierce crossfire with rockets and automatic weapons. Completely disregarding his own personal safety, Major Connor led a small party through the curtain of fire to reach the trapped men. Ignoring bullets striking all around him, he helped carry the wounded men to safety and then volunteered to lead a sweeping force to clear the hostile positions. Intense enemy fire erupted from a nearby building and stalled the advance of the friendly troops. So Major Connor and one other man fearlessly charged the fortifications alone. As he neared the building, he was instantly killed by a Viet Cong rocket. His gallant and fearless leadership in the face of great odds was responsible for saving several lives and inspired his men to fight furiously in the heat of battle. Major Connor's extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty at the cost of his life were in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army. We're going to do a couple more Vietnam ones here in just a moment. Before I get to that, I want to do just some more names. I want to do some Afghanistan names here. Corporal Mark Goyet, Chief Warrant Officer 3, Matthew Ruffner, Chief Warrant Officer 2, Jared Yoder, Major Ray Estelle, Second Lieutenant Justin Sisson, Sergeant Bradley Kroos, Private First Class Matthew Bertolino, Staff Sergeant Michael Bach, Specialist Jesse Snow, Staff Sergeant Thomas Walkup Jr., Captain Matthew Ferrara, Corporal David Sonka, Captain Nick Rozanski, Master Sergeant John Chapman, Specialist Ronald Windrick, Specialist Pat Tillman Jr., First Lieutenant Jonathan Brostrom, First Lieutenant Jason Mann. We will do some more Vietnam, touch on some global war on terror things, and read some more names in our final hour on Memorial Day. Hang on.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.